It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 284 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, we have the return of Richard Rivera, creator of Stabbity Bunny, among other great comics. And there are big happenings in the Stabbityverse. Some great things that are coming along that you're going to want to know about, including a book that he's been working on for a while that will be great for families. And you might find some more Stabbity in your future if you haven't collected the individual issues so far. When this podcast posts, he'll be at Wizard World Philadelphia in the Artist Alley section on a corner. So if you're going to be there, please be sure to stop by and check out all the Stabbity goodness. There's a lot to get to. So let's get on with the show. It's terrific to welcome back to the podcast Richard Rivera, creator of Stabbity Bunny, among other good things, and has a lot of interesting developments going on in the Stabbityverse and other creative things. How are you doing today, Richard?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back, Wayne.
Let's talk about Stabbity Bunny and what's been going on with it. I understand that there's some big developments. Do you want to give us an idea as to what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'll jump right to the biggest one. We got through with issue 6. And we went straight into hardback production. So as of tomorrow, we will have a 168-page full-color hardback. It's beautiful. Stabbity Bunny, the first story arc.
All right. And if I remember correctly, it's got a nice embossed cover on it, which will really stand out and I think attract a lot of attention.
We use that very classic image of Stabbity Bunny standing in that middle of the pool of blood, which has a smiley face etched into it. And basically the cover is a matte black with the blood part of the bloody smiley face in a kind of a spot varnish or shiny. And then Stabbity Bunny, the red logo, is also that way. And a few other details of the book. But, you know, that image has always been super popular. We've got it on T-shirts, posters, glassware, and I'm really happy to have it as our cover on this book.
Now, why don't you give people who may not have heard of Stabbity Bunny before like a TV guide overview of what the book's about?
All right. Well, we like to say that Stabbity Bunny could take place at the intersection of Nightmare on Elm Street and Sesame Street, where a 100-year-old plush bunny and his current little girl, who's 7-year-old Grace, battle evil.
Mm-hmm. And of course, now you said we got 6 issues in the can already, and we're looking forward to the book. Now, it's going to, as this posts, we're going to be at Wizard World Philadelphia. And do you know which booth we're going to be at?
Yes, we are 1818. So it should be pretty easy to remember. I was born on February 18th, and now I'm at booth 1818. I can't wait. We've had a really great time at Wizard World Philly before, and to come back and to have this to offer the fans and the people that picked up the book, I'm really proud of it and just so happy to have that with us.
What other Stabbity goodness are you going to have there?
Well, we will also have Stabbity Bunny hats, and basically it's a white felt hat with when the embroidering on the face of it is actually pulled from the cover of Stabbity Bunny number 1, or that same image that's on our hardcover, and it has real long ears that hang probably past your shoulders to like almost to your elbows. It's a really cute hat. We had a lot of people wanting the sample hat that we were carrying around with us for a while, So we got that towards the end of last year. They've been popular at the few conventions we've done so far. And we'll also have the T-shirts, which, again, have that cover image on it. People seem to love those T-shirts. We do really well with those. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring some number ones, because what I'd like to do is, if somebody wants to test drive Stabity Bunny, they can buy the number one for $5 as one of the first printings and get that signed. And if they like what they read, they're also going to get a little coupon in that book, which allows them to get $5 off the hardback. So it's kind of like you don't pay for number one twice. You get to, like I said, kind of test drive Stabity Bunny one. And if you're hungry for more, we've got the entire first arc ready and waiting.
Mm-hmm. What if somebody's already got some of the issues? How are you going to handle that?
Well, that's kind of be on an individual basis. We definitely want to offer them the chance to get a hardback, but also take into consideration the fact they're already Stabity Bunny fans and they've invested in the book, and their investment has kept us going. So we definitely will work out some deals with people at the convention and going forward.
Mm-hmm. Now, why don't you get into the story a little bit more? The characters in it are pretty interesting. We have discussed this before, but I'm always thinking there's somebody new to the story, and we want to get them involved and have them understand what's going on. So Grace is 7 years old, and she's part of a family. Do you want to talk about that family unit that she's a part of?
Sure. They live, first of all, in the very peaceful, wonderful town of Holiday, Vermont, mm-hmm. where nothing ever goes wrong, and I guess in a way they were kind of overdue. But the worst thing that's happened to Grace so far in her life is an ice cream headache. But by page 2 of issue 1, she's kidnapped. Now, the family has secrets. That really is one of the foundations of the story. And as always, with a mystery, it's kind of hard to know exactly what to give away. But I'm kind of more prepared now than I was 2 years ago. So I can tell you that Grace's mother, Amanda, she had a very interesting vocation, and she's had some very interesting training. Mm-hmm. And let's say that Grace also has benefited from that training. So there's some surprises along the way from Grace. She is a very kind, empathetic character that to a certain extent, as the book starts out, it would seem that perhaps she's kind of caught up in all of this and kind of reeling from the incidents that are happening to her suddenly. But I will tell you that she does recover. She does find her footing. And we're not talking about a constant damsel in distress situation here. Grace will evolve and take her lead in the book. Her mom, as I said, has some very interesting skill sets. Her grandmother, on the father's side, also has a very interesting character, and we first meet her in issue 2, where she comes up on her motorcycle, and she and Grace have been involved in some games that she's told Grace is a surprise for Amanda, but something that has actually endangered the family. That's something that'll come out. We meet the great-grandfather. We meet townspeople. There's some great townspeople that will be very important in the book. We meet, of course, villains along the way. And to call them villains might not be doing them justice, but they are people who have come to a certain point in their life where they are doing things that we don't understand but make perfect sense to them, and they are, for the most part, being manipulated, it would seem, by Glyph. Glyph is a character who is very, very old. We meet him towards the end of issue 1. He's kind of the puppet master, it would seem, and he has studied magic across the world for many, many, many decades. And he has, one of the things that he's done is he's turned the darkness in his soul into tattoo ink that constantly crawls across his arms and chest and neck area. And he can use his hand to draw with that ink as we would regular ink and make different glyphs and mystical symbols. And as a result of that, use different powers. He can also, as we find out, I believe, in issue 2, summon some of that ink and use it to draw upon other people. Mm. It's a very painful process, but something he actually relishes.
Mm. So he's a bad guy in that sense. He likes to cause other people pain.
He seems to, of all the characters that could be on the side of bad, he definitely seems to enjoy his role.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, you talked about the fact that there are several people in the community that we get to meet. If I remember, one of the ones that I really liked was the lady who works in the cafeteria at school.
Yes, that's the students call her Mrs. Pizza, mm-hmm. but her name is Piazza. And, yes, she's a very kind character. We have Rondo and Harmony, two super in love, super happy, no angst, no negative emotions, just two unbelievably nice, giving, caring characters. Mm-hmm. One of the trademarks of Harmony, as far as visually, is that she shaves her head just because she wants to shave her head, and she wears different wigs. You'll never see her twice with the same wig. She has a huge wig collection. It's one of the things that they kind of collect when they go traveling the world. Mm-hmm. And of course, they own a music shop. Mm-hmm. They will figure prominently in the first 6 issues. We meet them in issue 2, and their role will continue to grow.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're kind of funny characters because, you know, they have a way of living. You know, they're not just cartoon characters. They're very vibrant in the way that they talk like real people. It's one of the things I really like about the book is that everything seems to have a life to it. Has to have a way of making it feel like you're actually standing watching real people do things.
Oh, thank you very much. I do try to find a voice for a character and remain consistent with that voice. And it really helps to have done a lot of the background work on the character. If they have a large write-up about who they are and gone through the process of what their life has been like and what they want out of life and what makes them happy, then it really informs you. They write their own dialogue after they've had enough background work on them.
Now talk about Ronnie, the friend, the buddy who hangs around with her at school a lot of the time. What's his character like?
Ronnie's great. Ronnie is a very sweet kid. I will dispel the myth. No, Ronnie is not. Ronnie is not deficient in any way. Some people have thought that he's just way too kind, that he's living a similar life to Grace right now. Mm-hmm. Both of them have fathers in their family units, but both of them, the fathers are away. One is because of military service, and the other has to do with some of those family secrets that the Lees have. Mm-hmm. But with it's two moms running a household, each one with a boy, one with a girl, and as a result, they have bonded as well, the two moms.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the different people. You're right in the sense that maybe people aren't necessarily villains. They kind of have motivations that have to come to them. I keep thinking about there's a guy that's selling food at a little fair or something like that, and he's extremely thin, but yet he seems to be able to eat great quantities of food. And I like that because in real life, those people that can seem to process food in a big thing like that, it really comes across that they're usually very thin instead of usually heavy. Usually heavy people tend to eat a lot at different times, but he's very interesting in the sense that he's making food, but, you know, he tends to eat everything around him as fast as he can.
Well, he is inspired by most of the time. Well, not most of the time, but they do stand out when a lot of the people who win these hot dog eating contests or whatever, you know, they're some of the thinner people in the contest. And it's just that they've kind of trained themselves to, you know, like anything else, it's their sport, if you will. So, yeah, I thought in this case, that particular character, I would make him thin. But yeah, I think overall, I'm very pleased with the characters. The story, of course, beginning, middle, and end has already been done. So the only thing I do at this point is I do nuance some of the things, because most of this was written a couple of years ago, and now two more years have passed. So, you know, my writing style has evolved some. Some of the things that I want from the story has evolved. And in some ways, I feel that the story improves with some of those changes. Mm-hmm. But the main happenings, where the story's going, what happens to which characters, et cetera, I wouldn't say it's set in stone, but it's pretty much set in stone.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're really interesting characters. I really like the way that they develop and the way that they do things. You really begin to understand and care about them individually, which is good. Even the bad guys, they're not necessarily, you know, mustache-twirling people. There are different things happening with them as well. So I like the shades of gray that you've incorporated in the book.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I would say at this point, the only, if he had a mustache, he would twirl it, would be Glyph. Most of the other people have had things happen in their life, and they definitely are falling under the spell of or being manipulated along the way as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one character we haven't talked a lot about, and we probably should delve a little more into, is Stabbity himself.
Yeah,
because you came up with the name Stabbity, which a lot of people really like, and the character being a little plush rabbit. Talk about the character again, because I keep running into misconceptions about the character. That, you know,
well,
because he's called Stabbity, that means he's running around with a knife stabbing people. Talk about that character.
Yeah, we really can't talk too much about the character, except I would say that, first of all, he has been with this family for 100 years, and it should be a clue to someone who has seen him played with mercilessly by child after child after child, whether it be in the dirt or running around or being thumped up against the wall or whatever fun children are having. And he has been a fully loved, embraced, used toy, and yet he's in perfect condition. There's not one piece of plush fur missing. His little eyes aren't cracked. There's no faded things about him. It looks like he was sewn yesterday, and he's 100 years old and been as used as roughly as any loved toy can be used. So that would be a clue, I would think, right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Now, he was always called Hanzi. And Hanzi loosely translates into God is gracious. And that had been his name for the last 98 years or so. And then one day, Grace is running around looking for something. And she says, "Has anyone seen Stabbity? Where's Stabbity? I can't find him." And then she goes, "Yep, I found him." And she comes walking by with the bunny. And, of course, that bunny had been Amanda's before. She goes, "But, honey, that's Hanzi." And she goes, "No, Mom. He told me his name was Stabbity." And that, though that happens off scene, we don't see that in the book yet. That is the very beginning of, you know, some of the clues of what might be going on with him and with Grace. Mm-hmm. All we ever see of him in the book is a little plush bunny, his arms perpetually outstretched for a hug, almost a smile on his face. And even when Grace has has adventures with him in her imagination, mm-hmm. he is enough. He is fully what he needs to be to her, and he doesn't come alive like a Calvin and Hobbes situation, which I love. Mm-hmm. He doesn't change in any way other than she might dress him up differently. Mm-hmm. So to her, Stabity is a fully realized being just the way he is. Mm-hmm. She takes him everywhere, and they're kind of a duo. She, as I said, more recently, in the last year or so, she has said, communicated that she could hear him talking, etc., which is just chalked up by everybody, of course, to childhood imagination mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But, for instance, in issue two, she does have an incident where it would seem almost as though perhaps he's warning her away from eating something, because he suddenly says he wants it, as far as Grace communicates to the reader, mm-hmm. And that piece of food is never consumed.
Mm-hmm. Lots of interesting things going on. Of course, all these things, the great thing about this is the way it unfolds kind of slowly, but very determinedly. You know, we always find out things when we need to know them. Especially in the first six issues, which is a really great thing. So I love the story of it. I love the way that one of the things I really, really enjoy, and I think that's something that we ought to point out, is that many of the main characters are women, are female. You know, the grandmother, the mother, and then Grace herself are all female. Was there a purpose to that? Did you do that because you kind of felt women needed more exposure in comics? How did you develop that?
Well, of course, Grace was the first character. Her mom was. I just felt that she definitely needed to be a very strong character, because Grace has kind of taken her lead from somewhere. I mean, a 7-year-old child definitely depends on their parents for helping form their character and how they view the world and how they are. So we had, the mom just be a very strong, interesting character. In issue one, we hint at some of her background just visually, because issue one is a very fast-paced issue where we have to deal with Grace being kidnapped, some of the complications that arise from that, and the resolution of that kidnapping. Mm-hmm. As far as the grandmother, it seemed like a natural fit. The dad, of course, is away. He will be returning, but spoiler alert, he will not be returning until the second larger arc, which would be after issue 12. Mm-hmm. His mom, which is the grandmother that we have in the book, Lena, was very instrumental in shaping him. And I don't think I so much set out to exclude or include anybody. It was just who made sense in the story. And I wasn't going to consciously, artificially insert a male into that trio just to do it. It really just didn't suit the story or who the characters were. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are male characters that are becoming more important in the book. We've got Rondo. We have Emmett. Of course, Ronnie, the counterpart to Grace in a way. And there's a lot of other characters that will be introduced as we go. We do have the core, of course, already introduced and active throughout that first 1-6. But we have more people coming, of course. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be references to characters from myth and legend as well will continue to grow now as we're past the first six issues.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just kind of like the fact that, you know, it, mostly in comics, even like in animated series, stuff like that, there's usually young males, young boys. Like Ben 10 is based around a young boy. He's got a cousin that's with him, but, you know, and she's the female in the bunch, but a lot of the times you'll see younger males, so I think it's a really creative thing. And I like the fact that that can draw more female readers into reading it. And if even if young guys or even males read the book, I think it's a great thing because it helps get that thing out that the women can be at characters in comics and still be really fascinating and really engaging.
Yeah, there is one quick bit of dialogue at one point in the second issue. I forget exactly, that's bad, but exactly what Ronnie says, but he says something like, "You're such a girl," mm-hmm. and Grace just folds her arms and looks at him and says, "What does that mean?" Mm-hmm. And he quickly changes the subject. Mm-hmm. But heroes come in all shapes, sizes, ages, and of course both sexes, and I think it was important that they be represented that way. I will say another thing that is a little different about the book is that the physicality, the physiques of the characters, as you know, there are absolutely zero super muscular superhero style builds. Or mm-hmm. people have enjoyed their ice cream and their carbs. People have a high metabolism, maybe in one case, mm-hmm. but there are, I mean, you know, there are people of all shapes and sizes, and we really don't cater to the comic book stereotype at all.
Well, that's good. In fact, there's nobody wears a costume in the whole thing. You don't see any of that kind of stuff. But that kind of grounds it in reality a lot more to me. I like the way that they are all average, quote-unquote, people, and it just makes the book more relatable, I think.
Yeah, it does for me. I mean, I love superhero comics. I mean, that is what brought me into comics. That is what I still have a great nostalgia for, and even have another series which features superheroes. Mm-hmm. But it was important to me that this story, that the happenings are taking place with relatable, real people. Mm-hmm. I wanted to increase the horror in the fact that most of these people are very caring, nice, innocent people that are being drawn into horrific circumstances. And it was also very important to me that those people don't start adapting the, you know, stared into the abyss and, you know, and stared back and now I too must conduct my life this way, or I must start compromising my ethics or what I think is right. And they're going to be increasingly more tempting to do that. And I will say that not everybody on the on Team Grace is necessarily super moral and super great and just like, you know, Mary Poppins or anything, but you know, a few of them are pretty Mary Poppins adjacent. I think seeing those people, you know, kind of stick to their guns, as it were, for them to still do what they think is right and to not compromise no matter what the situation, I think is also very important.
Well, I like the way that Grace is so gentle, and she has an interesting encounter with a butterfly at one point in the several issues. And I really like that because I'm not used to many gentle characters in comics. Usually it's punching and kicking and jumping and doing all kinds of stuff. But she has a really very touching sequence, something to do with a butterfly. And I don't know if you want to talk about that or if we should save that for people that want to read the book.
Well, yeah, we'll save that for people to read in the book. But I will say that one of the first times after I had that issue printed, mm-hmm. one of the first times that I was talking to a lady about it, kind of flipping through and showing her, because I had a poster that related to that scene, and I wanted to let her know where the poster came from. And she did. She started tearing up and sort of crying a little bit, and that was a nervous laugh, not a laugh other than totally sympathizing with her, because I did write it based on some things that actually happened to me. But I think there are a number of touching family moments or moments of parenting. Grace is very very much a caring, sweet child, which, given what she has to face, makes that even more challenging, I think. But not really, because I don't think that kind, considerate, empathetic, sweet, and I don't think that translates into weak. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very important to say that. I mean, to say that both, well, out loud, yes, I did, but also in the story form there, because Grace is all of these things, but she is ultimately the hero. And ultimately, the most important thing about her is her kindness, and that will figure very prominently into the story.
Which is really great. I really like it. The name of the book, again, is Stabbity Bunny, and the hardcover is now available as you listen to this. And, of course, as we mentioned, we're at Wizard World Philly this weekend. If somebody is not at Wizard World Philly, how are they going to be able to get the hardcover?
Well, there's a number of ways, but I kind of want to step back for a moment, because we did jump right into Stabbity, and that's fantastic. But I would like to talk a little bit about the creative team that helped make Stabbity come to life.
Okay.
So, Dwayne Biddix is our amazing illustrator. And I just was very blessed when he came on board. He embraced the title fully, and he's here, for the long haul. And really, his artwork, which is in this case, kind of leans towards the cartoony, which is something we really didn't discuss. It leans towards the cartoony, but it's got a very serious nature as far as the story is concerned. Mm-hmm. And just again, visually reiterates that it's a book of contrasts. Mm-hmm. What it might look like at a glance isn't what it is. Who the people might appear to be at a glance might not necessarily be who they are. There aren't necessarily the expected people coming to the front to deal with problems. Mm-hmm. And the other person that's part of our art team is Liesl Buenaventura. Mm-hmm. And, I tried out a couple of colorists, and they had a fantastic, they were really good. I really liked what they did, but when I got Liesl's, it was the perfect fit. I mean, she added that extra layer of mood and atmosphere, and, she did her part to really transform the book as well. So mm-hmm. It's a total team effort, and I couldn't be more happy with everybody.
Cool. Very good.
As far as, I interrupted that train of thought, but as far as getting the hardback, otherwise, we've got stabbitybunny.com, mm-hmm. 2 B's, 1 T, mm-hmm. and stabbitybunny.com, it's not on that store yet, but it will be. In kind of the running around there, we pick up the books tomorrow morning and immediately have to begin our drive to Philadelphia to be there in time to set up for Thursday. Mm-hmm. With probably no hotel stay in between. And then there are, if you're local, a number of local stores in the Orlando area will be carrying it. Again, for a complete list of, some of the highlighted stores that are carrying Stabbity Bunny merchandise, we have that. We have the ability to order it online. And I don't want to speak prematurely, but there might be coming soon a national distribution of Stabbity Bunny as well.
Oh boy, we'll see how that goes. We're hopeful in that regard, I know. So you've got Stabbity Bunny going on. It's going on great, Gens. There's another project I think you're working on that you might want to talk about. Do you want to talk about that one a little bit?
I think very, very. I'll touch on a couple of them. very loosely, mm-hmm. Not only so that I don't have a 5-hour interview with you, but to make sure that, because you know, I'm working with teams on that, and I want to disclose what we all want to have disclosed at the same time, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But one of the projects I'm working on is a children's book, mm-hmm. and I don't want to say too much about that, except that the fantastic, amazing, wonderful, just mesmerizingly perfect artwork mm-hmm. is by Claire Geary. Mm-hmm. She lives in Canada, but I've been working with her on some of these pages now for probably a year and a half or so. Mm-hmm. But we're getting that book. It's coming together. And I have to tell you, her artwork, it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. She has such a great way of portraying dogs, and that is what the book is about. Mm-hmm. She doesn't anthropomorphize them or in any way, you know, they are simplified and portrayed in a cartoon-like manner, but they still look like dogs, but they have such clear emotion. Mm-hmm. What she can do with their eyes and, they can be smiling or look sad just by the little subtle nuances from their appearance. And mm-hmm. I think I can't wait till I can talk about that book in greater detail. Mm-hmm. I do think it's going to be well received, mm-hmm. and it's not your average children's book.
Mm-hmm. Very good, very good. I like that. Now, of course, you've got other irons in the fire that you probably can't talk about at this point, but we can always come back and talk about those things in the future. But I like the stuff that you do. I think there's a wide variety to your writing. And it's great that you can do stuff, including one of the things that's going to be at the convention is the coloring book. Do you want to talk about that briefly?
Oh, absolutely. The coloring book is something that Michael Locoduck-Duran did the art for. Mm-hmm. And basically, I mean, the coloring book takes place with the same characters. I mean, it's got Grace and it's got Sabity, who at that point was still called Hansi because she's 4 years old. She didn't say that he asserted himself until about a year ago when she was six. But she sees herself, and again, she doesn't see herself as Robin. She sees herself as kind of a Batman-like character, mm-hmm. and she sees Hansi Sabity as kind of the Robin type character. And again, he still doesn't speak, doesn't move, doesn't do things, but she just dresses him up as a Rabbit the Bunny Wonder in her mind, in her imagination. Mm-hmm. But the story goes through, and all the ice cream has been stolen from Holiday City by the Clownster, and we resolve that pretty quickly. And then at the very end, there's a reality punchline, which I won't I won't mess with, but we had a lot of fun doing it. Mm-hmm. And then just to talk about the book, the very first thing on the inside cover, the child signs in, it says Story Colors By, they sign in, and then it says underneath, copyright Richard Rivera, except for the awesome coloring done by the artist listed above. Mm-hmm. And they enjoy hopefully coloring that story, which is fully illustrated and the word balloons are there, and it tells the whole story. Mm-hmm. But then the second story is Grace in Space. And in that, working maybe just depending on the age of the child with their mom and dad, they can kind of sit there and go through panel by panel and look at the story, and they can decide what the story is. Mm-hmm. And get it put in their own words, their own sound effects, etc., which a lot of parents and teachers, I've had teachers buy it, are very pleased with. Mm-hmm. And then, before you get to the end of the book, there's a poster of the front cover, has a nice big area where you get to put the child's name that colored it and hang that up if you like. Mm-hmm. And then, at the very back of the book is the back inside cover, it says, what will you create next? Because we really want to encourage creativity, not only artistically, but in writing as well, just to fully engage the child's imagination. So those will be there as well.
Okay, well, it's a great book, and I know you've got more planned in the future, too. You've got other stories that you want to tell in that format as well, so I think people are going to be looking forward to those things as well. Well, Richard, I think you're doing a great job. I think that this is great storytelling and great fun for really a variety of ages, and not everybody can do that. So I'm real happy that Stabity is taking off and making things happen, and there might be a bright future for that book as well as the other things that you're working on. So keep up the great work.
All right. Well, thank you, Wayne. It's always a pleasure, and I really enjoy the style of your podcast, the conversation, the finding out a little bit more about what the creators are thinking. I enjoy listening to it, and, you know, keep up the great work.
Thanks so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. And in coming weeks, I'll have some great interviews, so be sure to be here. But until then, keep reading your comics.